This week, Joe Hogsett uncovers more public corruption. What's next? The governor signs the power grab bill, a lawsuit over cold beer, and the new drunk driving debate. That plus an Indiana Tea Party group targeted by the IRS, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending May 17, 2013.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.
This week, a former Marion County deputy prosecutor agreed to plead guilty to federal bribery charges. David Weiser served under Carl Brizzi. According to U.S. Attorney Joe Hogsett, Weiser used his position to get a $2,500 campaign contribution from an inmate's father. In exchange, Weiser agreed to allow the convicted killer to seek a reduced term. Hogsett would not identify the prisoner. However, in 2010, Brizzi and Weiser faced allegations of reducing the prison term of Paula Willoughby in exchange for campaign funds. Brizzi was not named in these charges.
These charges are making some in this community uncomfortable.
Is Carl Brizzi next? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Jennifer Wagner, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Leslie Weidenbender, editor at thestatehousefile.com. I'm John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. Jennifer Wagner, are the walls closing in on Carl Brizzi?
I don't know. It's sure not looking good for him. But I got to say, this week's developments to me are more about a U.S. attorney who has in 2.5 years, in a very bipartisan way, basically said to public officials in this county, in this region, you know what? Your luck's run out. You have to be on the straight and narrow. And I just think Joe Hogsett deserves a heap load of credit for what he's been doing.
Mike McDaniel, has Joe Hogsett tapped into something here, or you know, is this a culture of corruption as Eric Holcomb has described
it? I don't think you should, you know, rush to judgment on any of this stuff until we know what the facts are. I mean, I'm not one to like to comment about, you know, guilt and innocence and when we don't know what's going on yet. But I would agree about Joe, though. I think Joe's been very aggressive, and I can't imagine that Joe would make allegations of this kind or make charges of this kind unless he really knew he had it together, because those are pretty bold steps he's taking. And if there are others to follow, I'm sure that he errs on the side of making sure he's got it right. So we'll see where it goes next, but too early to tell at this point.
John Schwanis, what are the potential political ramifications of this for either Carl Brizzi, and that may be obvious, or the Republicans, or other people who may be connected with this case?
Well, we'll start with Carl Brizzi.
The easy ones
first, and then we'll work our way up. Let's put it this way. With Carl Brizzi, after he left the prosecutor's office, he had a reputation management consultancy that was dedicated to helping people who have had scandals or some other sort of knock on their career or character, a rebuild. Yeah. We'll see how that gets put to use, because it does suggest that there's another shoe to drop here. You look at the sentence, the plea agreement, 10 years for bribery, yes, that's significant. But when you're talking about a murder case where there has been a sentence that originally, now granted the courts had cut some of that already, but still you're going from, what was it, 70 or 90 down to time served at 40 years, half of that being the time that she served and was released. You've got to think there's some price to be paid there beyond the bribery plea agreement in the 10 years. And while Joe Hogsett has been very careful about what he can and can't say about pending investigations, he does acknowledge that that David Weiser is agreeing to cooperate fully with federal investigations. And one would, I guess, ask the question, if this is the end of the line in this case, what else is there to cooperate with?
Right. So, I do think that's the key.
Yeah.
I think the key here is what Joe Hogsett didn't say,
right,
and then the small amount he did say, which is that there is more investigating to be done, that they're not finished, that they're, that Weiser will be cooperating. And that could be in this case. Carl Brizzi did take contributions from the same folks here. So, but in addition,
and they returned them after the allegations were made initially in 2010.
Yes. So this could be cooperation in this case. It could be cooperation in other situations. And so I agree that I think Joe Hogsett has made it clear that he is going to go after those folks he believes have broken the law. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens next.
Jen Wagner, do you think, does this impinge in any way on Joe Hogsett's potential for a political future?
Well, I couldn't possibly speak to what, you know, if he has a political future or what he wants to do. I can't see that being I think the IBJ called him the Elliot Ness in the U.S. Attorney's Office could be a bad thing. I think people respect a law enforcement official who stands up to those in public office on either side of the aisle who break the law. And I think that will resonate should he choose a future in politics.
Okay. Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was trying to say, that was kind of the point I was making a minute ago, because if he gets careless with this activity and it looks like he's more interested in the headline than he is actually getting it right,
mm-hmm.
Then it can harm you if you're thinking about future things,
right,
as far as politics
are concerned.
I think
it's safe to say he hasn't even come close to the line yet when you look at the facts.
I don't think so either at this point.
Case,
but
I mean,
if you do... If it starts looking like that to people, then your future for other political office,
right,
becomes
and
a little more shaky.
But he knows that. Joe Hogsett's a smart
I think he's
politician.
Aware of it. That's why
that's
I said
right.
I think he better. I think he knows that he's got to get it right, mm-hmm, or he better not be doing it.
Okay. Governor Mike Pence signed the bill this week that takes away 4 seats on the Indianapolis City County Council. Jim Shella reports.
Democrats took to the airwaves on talk radio to make the case that Mayor Greg Ballard changed the rules in a way that is unfair.
This is a power grab. I believe the administration did not want to deal with the Democrats on the council, so they went to the State House to ask them to fight their battle.
The bill backed by Ballard not only eliminates 4 seats on the City County Council, it also gives the mayor budget powers that will reduce the authority of Democratic office holders, including the sheriff.
He chose not to work with us in a bipartisan way, but to take his argument in a partisan way to the State House. And that's just not how people want things to get done.
The mayor was unavailable, but Republican Party leaders reject the Democratic allegations.
It is not a power grab. It's all about accountable government. And the fact of the matter is that the average voter does not know their at-large counselor.
Some Democrats, however, believe that the bill passed by the GOP-controlled General Assembly and signed by a Republican governor will become a political asset for them in the next election.
The strategy for something like this, Jim, is pretty simple. You tell the truth. You trust the public to be intelligent and informed, and you make sure that everybody knows exactly what the Republicans are up to.
One thing you can say, Republicans created the at-large seats, and now they've taken them away.
Mike McDaniel, will Republicans live to regret that move?
I don't think so. I find the almost humorous what's going on around the signing of this particular bill. The Democrats in both 1975 and 1987 actually filed lawsuits to eliminate the 4 at-large seats in the City County Council. And on 3 other occasions, all 12 Democrats on the council voted to remove the at-large seats, so they're finally got what they were trying to get back in the 70s and 80s. And there were over 250 cities since 2004 in this country that have eliminated the at-large members of these councils. So there's nothing too outrageous about this bill at all. In fact, it is about saving money and government efficiency, and it doesn't start until the election, next election. So it's kind of the equivalent of I guess it could be compared. Somebody I heard the other day said that it was kind of like a reapportionment where you force some people to run in districts where there might be somebody else. But we just went through that in Indiana where the Republicans put 2 Republicans in the same district, I think, in 2 or 3 different places. So parties survive this and go on. But no, I don't see this as a big deal. It's going to have any long-term ramifications for anybody other than saving taxpayers' money.
But Jen Wagner, is it possible that it could galvanize Democrats?
I think it could. I mean, it was very clearly a power grab. You know, Mike, you controlled everything. You rammed it through. The governor signed it. We have to live with it now. And I think you may come to rue the day that this had happened because, A, I think that Greg Ballard will be the last Republican mayor this city ever sees for a long, long time. And B, I think Democrats can win some of those council districts. We're going to have to really, really recruit great candidates, and we're going to have great ground game. But woe to you if it turns out that we wind up still having a majority.
It does start with good candidates and good campaigns. And Ballard, of course, nobody thought that he was going to beat Bart Peterson, and he did. They said he couldn't win re-election because of the demographics of the county change, and he did. So he's obviously done a good job and is very popular. So, you know, they're going to have to do a good job of recruiting and putting a campaign together if they're going to beat Greg Ballard.
I think we will.
I think it's too bad, really, that this bill has the at-large seats in it along with the other things. I would have really liked to have seen this kind of a bill broken out. I think it was a power grab when the Democrats tried to do it. Years ago, they were trying to grab power, and now that the Republicans are trying to do it, I think they're trying to grab power. Separated from that, though, I think the other parts of the law, it would have been nice to have had a more diverse discussion about those parts that wasn't so weighed down by
because
the,
it was
at large.
A fairly far-ranging bill with a lot of different controls. And one of the things that is different here is that Marion County Unigov is created by the legislature. That makes it different than other cities and towns across the state. But John Schwannis, is it possible that, you know, with these changes, you know, the Republicans have caused themselves a problem long term, do you think, or is it just a matter of time?
I don't think the problem that they have caused is one of perception or the political, how this is viewed politically in upcoming elections, because I think everybody, and I'll include myself, we have short memories, we're on to other things, other issues will be at the fore by then. Where it does, I think, come back, to use the word you used in the introduction, will they rue this? It is, I think, the inevitability of the demographic shifts and the partisan shifts in the party, in the county. And to me, I won't say that there will never be a Republican mayor, but I think there will be a lot more Democratic mayors in the future, in the next 100 years, than there will be Republican mayors. And so pick whatever phrase you want. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. They're going to then the Democrat who's occupying that floor in the city county building will therefore have tighter controls on the Department of Development, have tighter controls on the financial, the purse strings of the city.
But if the Democrats are taking control anyway, I'm not sure that what kind of damage. At some point, if the demographic shifts are big enough and the Democrats are going to be in control anyway, I'm not sure what kind of punishment particularly they can impose on the Republicans.
Well, so, one Republican said in the legislature, though, they'll still have a supermajority on both sides and the governor's office, and so they could just turn around and change the law back if they wanted to.
That truly will be a power grab.
There won't
that
be any
argument.
The
perception might be a little more troublesome even than it is now.
Okay, moving on. Convenience stores sued this week for the right to sell cold beer. Again, here's Jim Shella.
There are stacks of beer at this convenience store in Fishers, and none of it is refrigerated.
Indiana has the dubious distinction of being the only state that regulates beer sales based upon temperature.
It's a circumstance that led three convenience store chains and their state association to file a federal lawsuit against the state agency that enforces alcohol laws, the Alcohol and Tobacco Commission.
The constitutional claims at issue are pretty simple. It's to be treated equally, to be treated fairly.
One of the things pointed out in the lawsuit is the fact that convenience stores in Indiana can sell cold wine.
This just doesn't make sense.
Beer and wine are the number two carryout item in Indiana convenience stores behind tobacco and energy drinks. Store owners say that if they were allowed to sell beer cold, it would immediately jump to number two.
And that, say convenience store owners, would lead to big changes.
Probably anybody that has a convenience store in Indiana, if they give this right, they're immediately going to go down and apply for a building permit and build a beer cave.
And if nothing changes, they say, investment will go elsewhere.
Thornton's has not built a convenience store in Indiana since 2006 for the sole reason of its antiquated alcohol laws.
It's about beer, but it's really about who gets to sell it.
Leslie Weidenbender, will that lawsuit be successful?
Well, I'm not one to prognosticate about things like that, but I will say the 21st Amendment of the U.S. Constitution gives states pretty wide latitude to regulate alcohol, so I think it's fair to say it would be a surprise if it was successful.
We haven't seen a lot of challenges, John, to legislation in recent years, and this is an interesting argument at the least.
It's an interesting argument. It probably can't fault the Association of Convenience Stores and petroleum operators for doing this. They've had such frustration in recent years with the General Assembly. Bill after bill has been rejected to change the existing statute. So I guess you got to give them credit for at least putting it back out in front of the public, maybe with this whole notion that, you know, why can you buy cold wine, but you can't buy cold beer? And there may be enough people in Indiana who say, yeah, it is kind of crazy. Maybe some of these rules are antiquated. And maybe that will be enough to push this legislation forward. I agree, though, that it's not likely to get the blessing, I would think, of federal courts, which I won't say they always give deference to elected officials in general assemblies, but that appears to have been the case on most alcohol-related regulations nationwide in recent years.
As John notes, Mike, a lot of Indiana's liquor laws are there are a lot of them, let's put it that way, and it's been a hotly contested area for a long time. Is this likely to change those dynamics in any way?
Well, I mean, I think we have seen the dynamics change there. There are changing attitudes about these things. There are several things that have changed. Even in this last session, we had craft distillery legislation
right.
that, previously had never passed before. And it is evolving, but in this particular case, I think what happens is when the public is made aware of the fact that the legislature decided a long time ago that liquor stores were going to be the outlet for most alcohol, and that you have a situation where you have a controlled environment there, because you can't be a minor and walk into a liquor store.
Right.
You can be a minor and walk into a convenience store.
Right.
And that's a huge difference. And when you start explaining that to people, that the person behind the counter in a liquor store has to have mandated state training on how they're going to sell alcohol, or somebody in a convenience store could be somebody 16 or 17 years old behind the counter with no training whatsoever. Then people start backing away from this idea, maybe we should make this as open as it is. And plus you run into the mom and pop idea of all the liquor stores in the state that a lot of people think a lot of them would go out of business if this law changed. So you've got a free enterprise situation combined with the Constitution, combined with fear of easy access to alcohol to underage people. So
yeah. Which never
it's going to be a tough uphill
never,
fight.
Well, the important question here, though, Jennifer, is will I be able to buy beer on Sunday anytime soon?
This is an important question. I have to agree. I don't think this lawsuit will probably be successful, but it probably is way past time. I believe the cold beer law was actually passed the year before I was born. Hasn't been changed since then. At the same time, I can leave here and go buy Sun King, get my $5 growler fill. On my way home, it's cold beer. That probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So maybe it's time to take a look at these laws in a broader perspective. And I have a feeling this lawsuit will kickstart that conversation again.
Okay. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll and question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, should convenience stores be allowed to sell cold beer? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, let the courts decide. Last week's question was, how does Otis Bowen rank on the list of Indiana governors? 14% said he was the best ever, 51% said he was among the top five, 27% said he was above average, and 8% said Governor Bowen was below average. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The National Transportation Safety Board wants each state to lower the blood alcohol limit for drunk driving from 0.08 to 0.05. One group against the recommendation is the American Beverage Institute, which represents bars and restaurants. They say it does nothing to stop hardcore drunk drivers from getting behind the wheel. Others are split on the issue.
I don't think it's a terrible idea. I mean, I work in a bar, so I know how crazy people can get pretty quickly.
It's definitely not realistic, especially as we get into the summer months where, I mean, you're going to be sweating. You don't know how much, really. I mean, once you're at 0.8, people feel fine at that. So imagine being a little bit lower than that. People are definitely going to be blowing out the limit.
John Schwannis, will that be a popular proposal in the Indiana General Assembly?
I'm not so sure it will. I mean, you look at how what a struggle it was when Indiana went from 0.10 to 0.08, and I would say the bellwether on all of this is Senator Tom Weiss of Fort Wayne, who spent more than a decade locked in battle trying to advocate for that earlier reduction in the prima facie guilty factor of BAC. And he's not even, I think, up for the for this fight. And based on some of the other members of the General Assembly who I haven't heard a lot of enthusiasm. Now, having said that, if the federal government once again, as was the case back, what was it, in 2000, said all of a sudden we're not going to use the carrot approach, but we're going to in fact
use the
basically
stick.
Start squeezing federal dollars out of you, then attitudes may change. But right now, no, I don't think there's much appetite for it.
Do you think there'll be anything going on with that this year, Leslie?
I don't see anything at all going on with that probably for several years. This is not an area where Indiana is going to be out front. It's possible that after a number of states, if they do act on it, if other states do, you might see some proposals start being introduced at the General Assembly. But I really think it would take the federal government saying, we're going to keep some of your money for Indiana
for
to take it seriously.
This isn't a partisan question either, really. I mean, this is a bipartisan situation in the legislature, don't you think?
Bipartisan issue, and I agree with John. I mean, I was there. I think we were all there when Senator Weiss, got very emotional about lowering it to 0.08, and I just don't see the groundswell here for that.
Mike? I think there will be legislation introduced, but I think it'll be a struggle this time around.
Okay. The Washington scandal surrounding the IRS has touched a Tea Party group in Indiana. It requested a not-for-profit status and heard nothing for 10 months. Here's Jim Shella.
There is a Don't Tread on Me flag outside the Richmond home of Ken Johnson, a Tea Party symbol. But when the IRS finally responded to his request for nonprofit status, he felt like his rights were being violated.
They wanted hard copies of everything that had ever been on our webpage. Every piece of material that we had ever distributed at any kind of a rally or meeting.
That was just part of what the IRS asked for in a five-page letter.
We had no way to go back and replicate, the past.
Eventually, Ken Johnson and the Indiana Tea Party decided it was too much trouble. They gave up on the effort to secure nonprofit status. It's the kind of treatment that has prompted calls to action on Capitol Hill. Johnson's Congressman Luke Messer wants an investigation.
The American people demand the truth, and this Congress is duty-bound to make sure they get it.
Messer is also a sponsor on a bill making it a crime for the IRS to discriminate. Johnson, meantime, wants others to learn from his experience.
But I would hope that people would pause, irregardless of their political persuasion, and say if they can do it to them, could they do it to us?
According to Tea Party leaders, Johnson's organization was the only one targeted in Indiana.
Jennifer Wagner, does that sound like wasted effort by the IRS?
I don't know. This story is still unfolding, and we've still got a lot to learn about it. Who was targeted and why. I do want to, quickly commend President Obama for taking quick action on this after it came to light, and I think there are still a lot of questions yet to be answered.
Mike,
looks
what
like
you say?
Barack Milhouse Obama had a target list, and this is bad. This is bad for this country. I thought we were way beyond this politically, but the IRS admitted that it wasn't just Tea Party or Patriot. It also was any group that said they were for making America a better place to live or anybody that had anything to do with debt and taxes. So they said it's a low-level person that made that distinction, that that's who we're going to target. I don't buy that. I mean, that's just way beyond the pale. We're smarter than that. And this is terrible. This is a bad news thing. I think it'll come back to haunt them.
Okay. Finally, it's graduation season, and here's one of the better graduation stories of the year so far. It took place at Grace Seminary College in Fort Wayne. Katie Graham had just received her diploma in her hand. Her professor had turned her tassel, and then she looked across the stage and froze. A man was running toward her with outstretched arms, and that man was the father she hadn't seen in 9 months. He had just returned home from a deployment in Afghanistan. To keep the secret, he even Skyped with Katie the night before to make her think he was still overseas. Mike McDaniel, he even told the media that he was going to do this. Is that okay?
This is great. This is a great story. When you think about what the men and women who serve our country sacrifice and the milestone events that happen in families' lives while they're gone to make it back for his daughter's graduation, it's a great story. I love that scene.
Yeah, it's hard to beat that for emotion, and it sure had to be a great day for Katie.
I would have let the media know, too. But it's a really sweet story.
Well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Jennifer Wagner, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Leslie Weidenbender of thestatehousefile.com. If you would like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.